Well, I appreciate the Lord this morning and the opportunity to access His Word and to study and consider it together, and pray that the Lord would bless His Word this morning. Appreciate your prayers. I'd like to consider the thought of motives this morning. The motive comes from the Latin word meaning to move towards. It is a thing, is something that causes a person to act, that incites someone to action. It's more than just what somebody did, but it's what caused them to do that. You ever look at things that we see going on in our world today and say, why? I can't understand that. What would make somebody do something like that? I think it's important for us to have some understanding of what motivates us as people. What motivates somebody to do something more than just a psychological exercise. But I believe it's important so that we deal with the real problem. Not just dealing with actions or behaviors or outcomes, but to address the real root of the problem. Think about whenever Cain slew his brother Abel. Had they had a legislature at that time? We don't know for sure what the weapon was that was used. But let's say it was a rock. We'll ban rocks. It's unlawful to pick up a rock. The same with a stick or a club. You see, that doesn't do anything to deal with the motives that incites somebody to take action, that motivates them or that compels them to take a certain action. The action is really the outcome of what's really motivating that action. If you've ever been in a trial of some sort where a prosecutor is presenting a case against a defendant, against an individual, and then there are the defense attorneys that are trying to rebut that the prosecutor's case, accusation against this individual. In our country, it's required that the prosecutor present evidence beyond reasonable doubt to convict that person. If it's a jury trial, the jury has to come to the conclusion that beyond reasonable doubt, they've established that this person did indeed do the thing of which they are accused. And a big part of the case that a prosecutor makes is to establish the motive, not only the facts of what happened, but to present at least a proposal or evidence that would suggest what the motive was behind it. It's not legally required that they establish that, but it really helps those that are rendering the judgment, in the case of a jury trial, the jury, to be able to connect the dots. It's hard sometimes, again, to understand why would they have done that? It doesn't make any sense to a rational or a sound mind or somebody that's not under the influence of some of these kind of things to figure out why someone would commit the kind of crimes that are committed every day on our streets and in the homes of our nation. So they try to establish what's the motive behind it. I'd like to present to you this morning a few stories throughout the Bible. We don't necessarily need to act as jury on these, for their lives are spent, their stories are told. But let's think about, again, Cain for a moment. We can read about him in the 4th chapter of Genesis. Cain committed the world's first murder. Why? What caused him to do a thing like that? It says that Abel brought of the firstlings of the flock and of the fat thereof, and the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering, but unto Cain and to his offering he had not respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. The Lord said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen? And the Lord presented to Cain a way of escape. He presented unto him the opportunity that it need not progress down this path. If you do well, you'll also be accepted. It's not just because Abel's my favorite. But nevertheless, it came to pass that Cain, as he talked with Abel, his brother, they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel and slew him. Envy, when not checked, can lead to a hatred that boils inside like fire. You know, it's important for us to deal with the root of a problem. Thoughts are presented unto our mind, and thoughts, if they're not dealt with, become desires. And desires, when they're not dealt with, become actions. It's important for us to recognize as early on in the process as possible, there's something at work here that I need to deal with, that I need to correct. Just as the Lord came to Cain and said, Cain, if you do well, you can also be accepted. This is available for you too. But Cain allowed something to work inside of his heart. That's really, and Jesus, many hundreds of years later, thousands of years later, he dealt with this at much more the root of the matter than what they were able to in this time. Even under the law which dealt with the behaviors of mankind. You cannot commit this act. You cannot perform this kind of conduct. Don't do it. But Jesus came to do more than just say, don't do it. He came to say, let me fix your heart. That makes you want to do it. Let me change that at the very source through a work of grace and atonement by my blood that couldn't be worked in any other way. And I am so thankful that he came to deal with the root of the problem. Think about Saul. Remember old King Saul. Whenever he was chosen of God, wasn't he? And put into this place to serve as the king over Israel. And he had a young man in his kingdom that, as I've heard Brother Marty say, I think any king should want to have in his kingdom. Go get him. I can send you out and full of zeal and passion and not willing to succumb to the fears that are so normal to man. Go after him. But Saul, when he heard the women dancing and praising David, there was something that presented itself unto Saul, and there was something that was working down in his heart that touched. And that passion, the scriptures call it an evil spirit from the Lord. We know that God is not the author of evil. But folks, when the Lord lifts his hand of protection over us and gives us over unto a reprobate mind, that's all that's left is to work all kinds of abominations. There is a root in mankind. There is a seed that has the potential. You know, if you look at a little acorn, it has all the potential within that little acorn to grow into something that is mighty, that the wind can't blow over. So it is in the heart of men and women. There's a root there that, if left undealt with, has the potential to bring forth all kinds of evil in people's life. We're not able to dictate the terms of it when we give ourselves over and allow that seed to grow within our heart, that seed of sin. Saul became so bitterly envious. You know, he could have dealt with that earlier on. Take unto us the foxes, the little foxes, the spoil of the vines. You know, I believe Brother Marty even used this example as well of World War II. I believe it was Churchill that warned, you're going to deal with Hitler. You're either going to deal with him now in his weakness before the war unfolded, or you'll deal with him later in his strength. You know, it's much better for us to deal with the foxes before they get big. You can look at it and say, oh, it's cute and it's cuddly. And you look at what that thing has the potential to do damage and what you have invested in your life, in your vineyard. You better not have sympathy for that thing that's trying to work its way into your life. For every one of us, Lord, help us to recognize those places that the enemy begins to come and present himself first to the mind to bring thoughts, to bring suggestions, to bring doubts to the mind that he wants us to just revolve around, and that thing to start to grow roots that work their way right down into our heart. You let that thing get a stronghold in your heart, and what are you going to do then? You just might do what Saul did. When that envy so gripped him, the spirit of that thing so possessed him, that he took the javelin that was meant for his enemies and he directed it at what should have been his best friend and tried to pin him to the wall with it. There was a motive behind it. There was something working that caused him to move in that direction, that incited him to that action. Let's look at 1 Peter 2 and 15. And I'm going to get a look in the rearview mirror from the New Testament perspective at a man in the old. 1 Peter 2. Well, let's see if I got the right place here. Let's try 2 Peter 2. 14, having eyes full of adultery that cannot cease from sin, beguiling unstable souls, and heart have they exercised with covetous practices, cursed children, who have forsaken the right way and gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor. Now, what did Balaam do? If we remember just in recap, looking back at Balaam, Balaam was presented with an offer, with a request. We want you to come up and curse the children of Israel, in short. You know, at first there was resistance to that. He went and asked the Lord about it. He came back and said, no, I can't do it. They left and they came back, I believe it was the next day, and they sweetened the pot. And they appealed to him again. And he, maybe it was that time that he went to the Lord. The Lord, knowing what was already in his heart, said, go. But this goes on to say of Balaam, he loved the wages of unrighteousness. Now we're getting to establishing the motive. Why did Balaam do what he did? What would make you go do something as foolish as curse God's blessed people? And to think it's all right. There's a motive at work. There's a desire down in the heart. And it's not limited, of course, just to him. I think of Gehazi, that was Elisha's prophet, or servant, I'm sorry. Whenever Naaman came up with his leprosy and he wanted to be healed, and he was offering all kinds of riches and rewards, and the prophet said, no, I don't want that. I don't need that. And he went on his way, but his servant saw that and said, I know what I'm going to do. And he pursued after him under guile and disguise and said, hey, we'd like some of that after all. And so he took some of it and went and hid it away. And how do you think you're going to get away with that before the prophet of God? And he didn't. Believe, as I recall the story, that the leprosy that plagued Naaman took over Gehazi. There was something that motivated the both of them. A love of gain. A love of riches. So it was with Judas as well. What would make you sell out your best friend? The one who had done nothing but good for you. Why would you do it? I believe the time came that Judas asked himself that question. Why? Why? I don't want this taken. Throw it on the floor. I don't want that money. I realize now it's so empty. It's so foolish. But you know that didn't start that night of the Last Supper and Jesus praying in the garden. That wasn't the beginning of what happened there with Judas. There was something at work way back before that. Even at that night, Jesus foretold, Judas, you're going to betray me. It was already at work down in his heart. Folks, the enemy plants seed well in advance of when he expects it to bring forth fruit. He'll present a thought. He'll present a suggestion. I don't mean this to give any credit to the enemy at all, but if he's anything, he's patient in working with what his devices and his plans are. Realizing I may not be able to get him just this moment, but I'm going to try to set something in motion in their life. I'm going to try to, like he did to Eve, he suggested first. He brought some thoughts to her mind that brought into question the nature of God. And he was able to continue working with that to bring it to the place that it brought forth wicked, bitter fruit. What does the enemy want to do in your and my life? You know, he wants to destroy every one of us. And the enemy has plans and schemes to do it. He knows what your vulnerability is, and he knows mine. He knows where he can most likely touch me. This is the place that if I can get him, it's going to be right here. And he knows how to custom tailor his approach, his appeal, his temptations to each one of us. Well, you look at mighty, beloved King David. How are you going to get to that man? You can get to him through his thoughts. You can get to him through temptation. You can get through him of him being in a place of carelessness, walking on the rooftop, and giving leash unto, giving right of way unto the unbridled passions and lusts of the human heart. You can get him that way. So it was that King David committed one of history's great atrocities. Samson, mightiest man that you can imagine. Unrivaled strength that the Philistines could hold nothing to him. What are you going to do with a man that you try to enclose in the walls of the city, lock the gate, and he says, that's nothing. I'll just take the gate with me. And he takes the gate and drops it off at the top of the hill as if not just laying it down right there, but I'm going to carry it all the way to the top of the hill and let you realize who it is that you're dealing with here. You can't touch me. But they did. They sought out what was the reason of his great strength. Folks, if any of us have strength, when it comes to spiritual things, it will not be of ourselves. But the enemy is going to seek out, what is the source of your strength? How can I best cripple, hobble you? And he found just the place in Samson's heart to touch. It didn't really matter whether it made sense or not. Whether it was rational or not. You or I, not in that situation, could have stood there and said, Samson, hello, wake up, what are you doing? After the first time, at least, Samson, any of us can see what her motives are. She's trying to act like she loves you and cares about you and all of that. Do you see what her motive is here? Samson, check yours. Check your motive. Check what's going on inside here. The desires and the passions that are motivating, again to the word motive, that's propelling you, compelling you to take action, because it was his downfall. I think of people, well, John the 11th chapter, people who, for the sake in the name of power, have done all kinds of things. Well, there was Herod. Herod, who was moved to such fear and envy whenever he heard that the Christ child was born. And wanted to be able to destroy that child and a potential rival to his throne so desperately that he declared that all the children, the boys under, what was it, the age of 2, should be killed. There was something that motivated that. But I think here in John, the 11th chapter, of people who had a name of being the people of God. John 11, we'll read here in the 47th verse. Then gathered the chief priests and the Pharisees a council and said, "What do we? For this man doeth many miracles. If we let him thus alone, all men will believe on him, and the Romans shall come and take away both our place and nation." What are we going to do with this man? There wasn't an inquiry of the truth or the merit of what he was saying. Fellas, we got to figure out how to hold on to our power here. Because he's a threat to our position, to our power, to our authority. We've got to deal with this. We've got to take action here against someone who did nothing but going around doing good. And they sought to take his life. Oh, how many people through history have been motivated by fear. You know, I believe it could be argued that King Saul, earlier in his life, was motivated by fear whenever he decided on the seventh day to go ahead and offer the sacrifice or the offering to the Lord himself. Not waiting for Samuel any longer. Because he looked at the situation, he surveyed it, and it said, Samuel had told him, he said, "You wait 7 days, and I'll be back the seventh day, and I'll offer the sacrifice," which was the way it was supposed to be done. Saul waited, all right, 7 days, and on the seventh day, he looked out, and there was no Samuel to be seen. And it says that the people were starting to scatter. And Saul, I believe, could establish, is reasonable to say, that he feared. The people are scattering. What am I going to do here? Samuel's nowhere to be seen. I've got to act. I've got to do something. You know, fear is never a good motivator to make good, sound decisions. You think fear had something to do with Peter as he's standing around the fire? Everything around him was already such a tumult. Jesus had been taken into custody and the others had scattered. There was still something in him that wanted to at least follow Jesus afar off. And then as they're standing there, so uncertain of what happens next, how does this unfold? And somebody says, "Oh, wait a minute. You're one of his too." What do you think it was that rose up in Peter? It certainly wasn't the strength that he thought he had. There was some fear. Rose up and that motivated him to do something that I think he believed he would never do. So, what is it today that motivates us? It's not just about the what we do. But why is it? What's leading us to do the things that we do in life? Proverbs, the 4th chapter. Proverbs 4:23, "Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life." You want to get to the root of the matter? You can dab up the water all day long, but until you fix the leak, you're going to be dabbing water the rest of your life. We got to fix the source, the root of it. Keep your heart with all diligence. Guard your desires. And I would add to that, keep your mind. Allow the Lord to, the helmet of salvation, to be a shield, a protection, to keep my thoughts. Because again, thoughts, if I don't deal with them, will find lodging and they can quickly become desire. Keep your heart with all diligence. Proverbs, the 16th chapter also, I'm going to look at a verse here.
All the ways, the second verse, all the ways of a man are clean in his own eyes. But the Lord weigheth the spirit. The Lord's looking at more than just the outside. You hear sometimes the phrase, ulterior motives. You've got an ulterior motive here. I remember one time I worked in retail. I had to work a Sunday evening. And it happened to be Super Bowl Sunday, which held no meaning to me. But it happened on that specific Super Bowl Sunday. As I was working, I got sick. And I mean, I was sick. And the longer I worked, the sicker I got. And I went to my boss and said, Sam, I've got to go home. I'm sick. And he looked at me and laughed and said, yeah, you and everybody else. What do you mean? Everybody's trying to go home to watch a Super Bowl. Sam, that is not why I'm trying to go home. I am sick. He wouldn't believe it. He said, that's what everybody's been saying. They're sick. They want off. They can't. I finally, Sam, you can come to my house. I don't even have a TV to watch the thing on. Well, that sure got his attention. And he finally, as I reasoned with him, he let me go very reluctantly. Ulterior motives. It's something that is beneath the surface. You're saying one thing, but I don't trust the real reason why you're doing it. And you know, we have to be careful of assigning motive to other people. We can hear something that's said, we can see something that's done, and say, I know exactly why they did that. Be careful. Because I have to realize, I'm not even a real good judge of my own motives. I need the Lord to expose within me. Here's why I'm doing the things that I'm doing. For example, the disciples, when they're walking along and their righteous indignation is stirred within them. Master, they won't allow you into their city. They're rebelling. They're refusing you. We've got precedence here. Would you like us to go ahead and call down fire? We've got the faith that you can do it. We've got the precedence. We know scripture that has been done before. Would you like us to call down fires? No. You don't know what manner of spirit you're of. You don't really understand what's going on down in here. You don't really understand what's motivating the things that you're wanting to do. That's what the Spirit does. And it's why it says here that the ways of a man are clean. I can rationalize in my mind every single thing I do. You know that? People often do. I've got good reason for why I'm doing what I'm doing. But the Lord weighs more than just the outward man. He looks at the heart. He looks at the spirit. He looks at what's motivating me to do what I'm doing. I can't fool the Lord. What does the scripture say? God is not mocked. Don't be deceived. Can't get it all at the moment. But the Lord knows and He understands what's really going on. And I can't pull anything off on Him. I can't fool Him. He knows the preparations. I believe the preparations of the heart, the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. The Lord knows the things that formulate, that make up what motivate me to do what I'm doing. And again, I'm not just trying to present psychology to us. But the Lord understands every element that make me up. And we are more complex than a one-dimensional being. So I can't just look at actions. I can't just look at one dimension of a person and get the full picture, or even of myself. You know, when it comes to actions and to motives, you know, you can do the right thing for the wrong reason. For example, the Pharisees, they were given alms. Right thing or wrong thing? Well, it's the right thing, isn't it? It's a good thing to do. But they were doing it for altogether the wrong motive. They were praying. Good thing or bad thing? I'd hope that's a good thing to do. But they were doing it to be seen of men. Their action was right. Their motive was wrong. The scripture says, let love be without dissimulation. Well, love is good, isn't it? Love is about more than just in word. It's also about it being in deed. You see, when it comes to ulterior motives, what is flattery, by the way? Isn't flattery a form of a compliment? Saying something nice about somebody? You know, there's a lot said in scripture about flattery. There's a motive behind that that is not sincere. Let love be without dissimulation or without hypocrisy. There's guile. There's a hidden motive behind it. I'm saying something nice about you, not really even meaning it, but just trying to get you into a place that I can then get favor or get what I want out of, manipulate. No, don't let love be that way. It can be a good thing, saying something nice about a person, but for altogether the wrong reason. You know, you can do now this is a little more, to my mind, a little more nuanced, but you know, you can do the wrong thing for the right desire, the right motive. I've been hearing about Saul that became Paul. You know, he did what he did in zeal. In wanting to maintain the purity of the faith. That, I believe, was his motive. I don't believe he just got up in the morning and said, I want to be an evil person. No, he was a Hebrew of the Hebrews. He was a Pharisee in the truest sense of the term. And they were about maintaining the purity of the doctrine, of the faith, of the traditions that have been handed to them. Now, did that absolve Paul of his responsibility and his guilt? Having the right motive, in a sense, it doesn't absolve you of doing the wrong thing. Though he was sincere, he was still a sinner, as he said of his own self, a sinner above all sinners. But you know, it also gave the Lord something to work with. That there was within Saul, I've got to change his orientation here. I've got to intervene. I've got to step in and stop him on his road and on his journey. But if I can get him pointed in the right direction, there's something here of a sincerity that I can work with. Think about the time, call this wrong or against convention, but the showbread was consecrated bread. And David ate of it. David wasn't struck down dead. Jesus even referred back to what David did as being something that was justifiable. David, in his hunger, that he partook of the showbread. What might be considered the wrong thing, but for a motive that God looked at and accepted. On the other hand, Uzziah, he did what you might would think would be the right thing to do. Of course, steady the ark. You don't want the ark to fall, but God had very explicitly said, not only don't touch the ark, but also maintain a certain distance from it. And there was what would seem to be some absence of the fear of God that caused them to get so close that at the jolt of the cart, they put their hand to it and lost his life. I want us to realize through all of this that it's not just the what, but the Lord understands the why. The Lord understands what's motivating us to do the things that we're doing. And it cuts through excuses. It cuts through justifications that I can build up in my mind. The Lord knows directly why I'm doing what I'm doing. What's motivating me to do those kind of things. So, what is our motive? We've talked about a number of things that are the wrong motivations. Wrong motives to have. But let's look at Colossians, the third chapter. Colossians 3 and 23. Servants, 22nd, we'll start. Obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance. For ye serve the Lord Christ. Why are you doing what you're doing? When it comes to serving the Lord, why do you do the things that you do? When it comes to convictions, why do you hold the convictions that you hold? Or not hold the convictions that you don't? What is it that motivates us? What is it that compels us? What's the desire that I have? Is my desire to please the Lord with all my heart? Lord, whatever it takes, I want to please you. Lord, whatever will bring your blessing upon my life. Lord, I want that. If you'll just suggest to me what you want, my heart cries, yes, Lord, that's what I want to do. Is that what motivates us to come to service? Is that what motivates us to act the way we act and follow the observances that we follow? You know, if our motive is because of what people expect of us, it may be a guardrail for a little while, but that's not going to be a very lasting motive. And you know, if that's our motive, it's really kind of what the law did. And it says that the law brought death, but the Spirit brings life. When the Lord writes His law upon the table of our heart, and He changes my desires. Back to what we talked about earlier on. The Lord fixes not only the what that you have to do, but He fixes the desire that motivates us to do the things we do. And that's what makes living for the Lord such a pleasure and a joy. It's not a bondage. It's not something I have to do. It's something that I love to do. When you think about motives also, what would motivate a woman to go bring an alabaster box of ointment that was months of wages in value and pour it all upon Jesus? Why wouldn't, okay, just dip your finger in it and anoint him or something, but what would motivate you to say, I don't care how much it costs. I don't care what the value of it is. I don't care if you say it's a waste. What would motivate her to break it open and just dump the entire contents? You know, there was something inside that made it seem to her that it was well worth it. That made her reckon in her mind, that's a low price to pay for what I'm doing here. Is that how we serve the Lord? 2 Corinthians, the 5th chapter. Paul said in the 14th verse, "For the love of Christ constraineth us, because we thus judge that if one died for all, then we're all dead." Oh, is that what constrains us? Is that what holds us and compels us to do the things that we do? The love of Christ. You know, that is a motivation. Love is a motivation that really is even stronger than fear. People will use rulers and dictators will use fear as a motivator to try to bring the kind of behavior and conduct that they expect out of people. You can use fear that way. You know, you can use fear in your marriage to try to force submission. It's not going to work out the way God planned, the way God designed in its beauty. But you know, if love is the motivating force behind what I do in my marriage and my relationships, behind what I do in serving one another and in serving the Lord, not only does it change my perspective, it makes it a pleasure to do the things that I do. You remember the time that David, when he was and his men were in exile, and he longed for a drink from his childhood well. Oh, if I could just have some of that water. Almost like he was daydreaming out loud. But there were some men that heard that, and that was all it took. David didn't have to issue a command or an order. He didn't have to force them. He didn't have to drag them to the front lines. They heard their master say, "I wish I could have a drink." And they were on their way. And as I imagine, with fire in their eyes, there isn't anybody getting between us and getting our master that water. Get out of the way. They had a mission and a purpose, and nothing was going to stop them from it until they got that water and brought it back unto David. What motivated? What was the motive? You know, there was a love that compelled them to do what would have seemed to others to be foolish. And if that is not the motivating force behind everything we do, our experience will be an empty and a vain one. Lord, help us so we be compelled and motivated by love in all that we do. I'll close in the book of Psalms. As we think about these motives, the 23rd verse, "Search me." 139:23. "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, and know my thoughts. And see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." Lord, I invite and I ask you, Lord, come. I want to be an open book. Lord, come and try me, prove me, test me, because I want to know. I don't just know, just Lord, don't shine your light over here. I don't want to know. I don't want to hear. I'm happy just how I am. Lord, come and shine your light. Lord, I want to understand myself better. I want to understand what makes me do the things. What makes me react to this kind of situation the way I'm reacting? Because if I don't really understand that and deal with it, I'll always go through life reacting that way. I want to learn. Lord, teach me, search me, and help me to know if there's some things that are motivating. I've had the Lord come along to me and show me places that, Clint, there's a little bit of vengeance that is motivating the way you're feeling and the way you're responding to this. Times the Lord has shown me places where I was being motivated by pride. You know, that's a hard one to see in yourself. Easier to see in others. But I want to know, Lord, if there's something that's causing me to act in a way that's not pleasing to you, would you come and search me and expose me? Lord, help me to deal with the motives that are compelling me to take action in my life. You pray for me. I want to be faithful to the Lord.